you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
See masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan right now, brought to you by Ford and your North Texas Ford dealers. Ford is the best in Texas. It is our Dallas Cowboys insider, Mickey Spagnola. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
We're doing great. Would you be more excited today if the Cowboys re-picked up Ben DiNucci or went and got Tommy DeVito? I know, equally exciting prospects. Who would you be more excited about?
Mike White.
Oh, same.
I
liked him.
Yeah, I always wanted
Mike. You guys are trying to set me up.
Hey, these players are available. We were talking about, obviously, quite a bit of Trayvon Diggs. Do you get the sense, and I know week one is possible, but do you feel good that in one of the first two games that we'll see some Trayvon Diggs out there?
Yeah, and I think that, let's consider this. The last time he played in pads was December 9th. They're going to have one padded practice between now and the game.
Right. God, that's crazy.
Right? And so, you know, I think and he mentioned it. You know, they asked him what, you know, do you have to take care of most to be able to play? And he said conditioning. And that's what I've been hearing since training camp. It's like, is he in good enough football playing condition to go out there and play with one padded practice? Now, I don't know. They may say they get to the game and they're desperate and they say, okay, go play. But I think it's kind of chancy. And consider this. So from now until they play the Giants, it's 3 weeks. So he would have that much time to continue
right.
getting in condition, have at least two padded practices before going out there and playing a game. So it's not so much about, you know, recovering from the surgery as it is also being in condition. Now, he did take part in practice yesterday, but it was a shells practice. And it was maybe a step above a walkthrough, right? There's no contact or whatever. And they don't practice again till, where's my schedule? Friday, right? And then you get an off day on Saturday, and then you practice Sunday, Monday, light on Tuesday, and you take off on Wednesday. So there's not a lot of practice going on between now and the game. So I think a lot of it's going to come down to, do they think that he is physically able to play a game somewhat, not safely, but without suffering some sort of soft tissue injury that keeps him out for another week or two.
And the way you're describing it, I know it's not exactly the same, but the way you're describing it kind of sounds like the scenario we've talked about many times over the year of, do you move a player back quickly when you're about to have a bye? You know what I'm saying? Like, the way you're describing it kind of sounds
bye is three games in.
Yeah.
Is that right? After three games, you get the bye?
For the Cowboys?
Yeah.
We got like nine games
Like, oh.
No, but the way you're describing
it. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Because it's the Thursday game, and then you have almost a week and a half until the next game. The way you're describing it sounds like perhaps maybe having him out there in week two might be the better way to go.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what's got to be in the back of everybody's mind, because when the question's been asked by Schottenheimer, and it's like, well, we're just glad to see him out there. He's working hard, right? But there's no definitive answer.
Right.
Well, yeah, he's starting in the first game. I mean, he hasn't even practiced covering a wide receiver in a real practice, right? Now, I know he's good and great that he's making progress, but again, one of the reasons they don't leave him on PUP is because you're not allowed to even be out watching practice.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. So by him being on the 53, he can participate in everything. Even if he's not going to play, he can at least go out there and do some stuff. If you're on IR or PUP, you're not allowed to do, you know, everything. So that's another consideration that's like, okay, we got him. We got him on the field. We can do this extra stuff with him. It's not just rehab. And so that also goes into the consideration to get him on the 53. Now, the other thought is if he's at least that close, then I think you have a better idea of how you construct the secondary, knowing that at least by maybe week two, he's going to be able to play. So you may not have to go long on a corner, or you can try to get him on the practice squad. And then if you need him for week one, you elevate him off the practice squad. So those are a lot of considerations they have to make here over the next, four hours or whatever it is.
I don't know, Mickey, how much like what's available is going to be determine this, but what do you think that they're keeping eyes on the most around the league of people that are getting released and cut right now?
I would think with him being nearly available that you're probably not looking at a veteran cornerback.
Okay.
If you do have as much confidence as they seem to have in Kaiir Elam, right?
What's your confidence level with that?
Yeah, player? I think he's been, you know, more impressive than I expected. You know, if you just judged off of his history in Buffalo, but he's a pretty sharp guy. I remember talking to him for a while when they first got back here after one of the workouts or whatever. And, you know, he had a rough go in Buffalo. You know, that second year he was injured. Didn't get to play much. The third year, somebody jumped ahead of him in that second year when he wasn't playing. And he didn't get much of an opportunity. But then they played him in the playoff game that year. And it's like, huh, well, he wasn't good enough to play during the season. And then you played him in the playoff game. So I think there's something there we got to see. But I think what he did in the practices that we were able to watch, I thought he played well. And now the key thing will be if Diggs gets back, say game one or game two, he's on the outside. Kaiir Elam could be on the outside, or they can put Bland on the outside. And then when they go to nickel, he can move inside and Elam plays outside. So they've got some a versatility there in how they construct the defense if indeed they don't have supreme confidence in one of those other guys, the Childress or, I'm going to forget the other guy's name. I'm sorry. The other corner that was playing in the slot that could, you know, help him out on the nickel defense, Keeman Hall.
Okay.
Yeah. And so they would have some versatility there on how they handled it. So if because Elam said that he told me he played some slot in college, but that's a while ago. So we'll see how they work those three, four guys out.
I'm not saying he would start, but Andrew Booth. Oh, no. I was going to ask about his prospects and where he could sit with making the roster. But that noise led me to believe maybe you're not super pumped about him.
Well, I'm not. I don't know what they think. Let's put it that way. I mean, I know in the game, he had the interception. But
do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
That was about the one thing I kind of saw him do. So I don't know. I think he would be on the edge of making the 53, maybe the practice squad, as a guy that's least played in the league for, what, 2 years? Because he didn't really play all that much last year.
What are we feeling like the plan? I know he got out there yesterday for practice, but with Tyler Guyton, the plan for him, and then, you know, how does that affect the rest of the offensive
line? Yeah, I think he's got a ways to go. Okay. I mean, that was the first time I've seen him in helmets and even shells since he suffered the injury. And I would imagine, he's got a ways to go. So he's another one kind of in the same boat as Diggs. You know, if he's not ready for the first game, then what about the second game or the third game? And you'll just have to live with Nate Thomas. But at least when you see him get out there and take, you know, whatever he did in the practice yesterday, at least you know you don't have to put him on IR or you don't have to put him on IR return after you're on the 53 for 24 hours. So I think he's gone across that hurdle that you can just leave him on the 53 and at some point he'll be ready to go. Because a lot of times when guys come off, they just want them to be able to engage in all the stuff they do and not be limited because of being on IR or PUP or whatever like that. So I think that sometimes that goes into the consideration if you take the guy off of that NFI, which it looks like Revel probably will stay there, which means he's got to miss the first four games.
I don't know how much more progress you made on the Netflix documentary.
I finished it.
Okay. Because I was going to say, obviously, you've been busy. I'm curious, any of your thoughts, but especially, what did you think about how they broke down the Jerry-Jimmy power dynamic argument, however you want to describe it?
Well, here's what I remember. And again, you know, they're asking everybody to remember 30-some years ago, right? And a lot of times, you know, I mean, I don't have the greatest memory in the world to start with, but you know, guys, you know, sometimes revisionist history is a little bit different. So here's what I remember about how the deal broke down at the end. So I don't remember the days of the week, but the night before they had the press conference to announce that Jimmy would be leaving, Larry Lacewell, who was kind of the in-between guy between those two guys because he knew Jerry. He knew, you know, he helped coach Jimmy and Jerry, you know, all his days at Oklahoma, head coach. So he was here as a personnel guy. And I remember him telling me at the end of the day, he said, it looks like I've kind of brokered the deal that they're going to go one more year. So basically, that's what everybody was reporting that night and the next morning in the newspapers. And so about, if the press conference was at 12:30, I want to say it was around 10:30, something like that, I found out that the press conference was not going to be about one more year. It was going to be they are terminating their relationship, right? Mm-hmm. And that was not what everybody was reporting. So, and I'm not trying to say this to make myself look good or anything, but that day was the first day I was going to do the ranch report at the ticket. And so it was like my first day on the job. So it was around noon, and I was supposed to do an update. And I basically said, sources told me that they're going to terminate their relationship. And everybody's like, what? What are you talking about? And I'm going, this is my first day on the job. I don't think I would be reckless, right?
Or maybe
I got a scoop for you.
Yeah, right? And so Dale Hansen heard what I did, and he had a live shot like at 12:15, and he comes running in, and he goes, you sure? And I told him the same thing. I said, I don't think I would have done this and get fired on the first day on the job, right? So he goes, and I don't know if he used my name or just said, sources said that, you know, they're going to separate. So the press conference starts at 12:30, and I'm sitting there kind of on the side, not in the middle of the team meeting room. And Jerry gets up there, and you guys, he might have talked for 5 minutes, but it felt like 5 hours to me because he wouldn't get to the point, right? And I'm sitting there with a pit in my stomach going, oh, come on, just say it, say it. And Dale's in the back waving his hand like, come on, get on with it, right? Because we're both hanging out there. And finally, he announces that we've decided to, terminate our relationship, and Jimmy's going to move on, and we're going to have to hire a new coach. And I'm going, oh, my God, thank God. You know, it was just, it was excruciating. But that's how I remember how, and what happened was, and Lacewell was right. They had kind of agreed to do another year. And then in the morning, a newspaper article came out and had Jerry saying some disparaging things about Jimmy. And Jimmy saw it and he goes, darn it, that's it. I'm out. I'm tired of this. So, but the bottom line on the whole thing was, I think, you know, Jimmy found Jerry gave him a big hoop to jump through to get out because he was getting antsy and it was time to move on. He had never coached anywhere more than 5 years, and his 5 years were up, and he had been flirting with Jacksonville. And I think that it was like, okay. And if I remember correctly, Jerry paid him $2 million to leave.
Whoa. I never knew that part.
There was an exit deal. So it was like both of them, you know, kind of were responsible for this. It wasn't just the 1-8 thing that Jerry got fed up and,
it was,
you know,
between $2 and $4 million.
But wow. they were kind of at odds. And I think Jimmy, and you know what? It was weird because after that Super Bowl, and I remember talking to some of the players, in the off season before this happened, and they told me that Jimmy coached him so hard after they lost those first two games, and then had to go on a winning streak at the end and win the final regular season game in overtime against the Giants just to win the division, right? And a couple of them said, I don't know if he could have coached us any harder than that ever again.
Oh,
like,
wow.
He pushed us as hard as he could push us. And it would have been, I don't know, February, beginning of March, I saw Jimmy, and it was the first time I think I'd seen him in ages. And I said, what are you doing, going on vacation? And he laughed, and he goes, I took 2 weeks off for the first time since I took the job at Oklahoma State.
Jeez.
Wow.
He had never taken a break. And he took his boat. He went to, you know, wherever the water was, and enjoyed himself for 2 weeks, and I'm sitting there going, oh, no, he's found out there's more to life than just coaching football.
Well, we have to take our break as well.
I know. I probably went too
long.
That
was fun. That was good. That was good storytelling.
That was an excellent edition today of what we'll call the Ranch Report with Mickey Spagnuolo. Thank you very much, good sir. We'll catch up with you tomorrow.
All right. Thanks for putting up with me.
Absolutely. There you go, Mickey Spagnuolo.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.